So Sam and Jen are good friends of mine, Sam's family, of course. Jen is my sister-in-law, and they have her and her husband have 4 kids. And you're welcome to tell more about them too. But we live out in Ontario. Go to our a sister church that's part of the network in Ontario Ranch. And then Sam and her husband Alex were pastoring CIV Alhambra for how many years was it?
5
years, and then they launched.
We were here, yeah.
A new church out in Fontana called Ridgeview Church.
Oh boy. Well, we just celebrated our 5-year anniversary this summer, so almost 6. We're on our 6th. We're working on our 6th year. Yeah. Yeah.
And they have 3 kids, and so I'm so excited you guys get to learn from them. I'm excited to learn from you guys too. So I'll let you guys take it away.
Thanks so much for having us. It's really fun to some of you guys I know, and what's interesting, so Jen is actually in the stage that we were sharing with you about. I am past that stage. So my oldest is 17 years old. I have a daughter, Katie, and then 2 sons, Levi and Jude. And Levi is 15 and Jude is 12. And so I'm definitely speaking from having gone through recently this stage, and Jen is like, I'm in it with you stage. So hopefully that will be encouraging to you. But for those of you who were around when Alex and I were here in Alhambra, at CIV Alhambra, you were around me when I was raising this age of kids, because we were here when we moved here when my daughter was 7 and my youngest was 2. And then we were here for about 5 years. So anyway, did you want to introduce your kids real quick, or do you want to?
Oh, sure. I have 4, and we have a daughter who's 9, Myla, and a daughter who is 7, Ellis, and then a little boy who's 4. He'll be 5 this summer, and then a little girl who will be 2 this summer. So they're 9 to 2 about, and so.
So, as Jen and I, just a heads up for you guys, we did not plan this talk together. So we have not practiced it together. We had one phone call where we said, okay, what do you think? And then I'll do this and then you do that. So, it just is, it's not going to be this like flowy thing, but I think you'll hear from both of us, Lord willing, by his grace, some helpful things. But the first thing I thought of, I have a sign in my house. It's from Hobby Lobby where my daughter works. Proverbs 24:3-4. And it says, by wisdom, a house is built, and through understanding, it is established. Through knowledge, its rooms are filled with rare and beautiful treasures. And I love that sign. I love that verse, because to me, it capitalizes exactly what our role is as parents, as moms, and, and Lord willing, husbands, a mom and a dad. But, the rare and beautiful treasures are our children. It's the godly offspring that we're building up. And so what this verse is telling us is 3 things are required for that. And so Jen and I are going to, kind of go through each one of those. So the first one is wisdom. The second one is understanding, and the third one is knowledge. So do you want to share the next verse right now?
Sure. Okay. Yeah. I have on there as well, along with that, one of our key launching verses for raising our kids, it's been really encouraging and continued into homeschool with us, is Deuteronomy 6:4-9. And it says, hear, O Israel, the Lord our God, the Lord is one. You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, with all your might. And these words that I command you today shall be on your heart. You shall teach them diligently to your children, and shall talk of them when you sit in the house, and when you walk by the way, and when you lie down, and when you rise. You shall bind them as a sign on your hand, and they shall be as frontlets between your eyes. You shall write them on the doorposts of your house and on your gates. And this verse felt like went along with what Sam was talking about, is like, okay, so how? Like, what are we doing? Like, this is actually everywhere. And my husband and I are maybe both firstborn. We're quite literal. And so we've tried to, like, signs like this have all over our house, things that we want our kids to constantly be referencing. And we're actually currently tearing down another wall of decor to put up another place for that, because we want to be able to reference all of the time. Like, this is what we're saying we want you to do. See, it's right there. You can look at it and you can see it. I feel like this just gives a really practical, well, how do I have kids that grow up to be godly? Well, this is what you're doing. This is what you're talking about. You're not trying to find random things to have conversations over, but this is what you're talking about as you lay them down, as you drive in the car, as you're processing play dates, as you're going into play dates. Like, this is what you're talking about. This is the forever conversations. What does God say? How do we do that? What does he say? How do we do that? So, and that, I think we'll talk about that some more.
Yeah. So the idea here is that parenting, it's a job. It's not just, oh, we're adding to our family. Mm-hmm. It's an assigned stewardship from the Lord, and it's constant. It's a 24/7 job. And there's different ways, you know, you outsource some things depending on how often you have your kids or not. But for me, one of the most helpful things was to make that shift and realizing, like, this is a full-time job. Mm-hmm. And I need to make sure that I'm seeing it as there is something that I need to be accomplishing here. So we're going to jump into the first one, wisdom. Godly parenting requires wisdom. And godly wisdom is really just the understanding that God's ways are the right ways. Mm-hmm. And so what is required by us with godly wisdom is that we actually need to adopt God's perspective on life, on how life works, and we need to adapt to it. Isaiah 55, 8-9 says, "For my thoughts are not your thoughts, declares the Lord, or neither are your ways my ways, declares the Lord. As the heavens are higher than the earth, so are my ways higher than your ways and my thoughts than your thoughts." This is one of my favorite verses especially when I'm dealing with something that's hard to understand, or I'm like, why is this going on? What's happening? Mm-hmm. To remember, God sees things so much bigger than me, so much broader than me. And his plan goes so far beyond my little focus. And so I have to actively work to adopt and adapt my perspective to God's. And so he just has a different way of seeing things, and his ways are true and right. And so if I get to a point where there's a difference, I need to adapt to his ways. My perspective is naturally selfish. And as human beings, the Bible says we are naturally selfish. And so naturally, that is the approach we're going to take. But God, he has such a long and he wants so much more than just what we want in this little life of ours. He wants our life to extend past our life and into eternity. And so that's his perspective. And then with that, Romans 12:2 also says, "Do not conform to the pattern of this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind. Then you will be able to test and approve what God's will is, his good, pleasing, and perfect will." This is just a reminder. Naturally, we are. The warning here and the assumption here is that naturally we are conformed to the pattern of this world. We naturally go that way. So we have to actively choose and actively work on being transformed so that we can see what God's will is, recognize it. And practically the way that looks is we have to know God. We have to know who he is. We have to know his ways. We have to be in his word so that we can recognize his ways. And then we also can recognize what ways the world, everyone around us seems natural, but is against what God wants. Otherwise, we are naturally going to conform to what the world is doing. And so, another thing within that wisdom caveat is another thing that is really important here is we really need to seek wise counsel from a godly church community. And so this was huge for me and my growing up time with my kids when they were young. You want to have a running pack of other like-hearted moms, parents who have the same goals, who have the same perspective, and who want to raise godly kids, and you want to make those relationships a priority. You want to, on a weekly basis, like we made sure that we were getting together with other moms on a weekly basis, park days, play dates, where we can be encouraged and held accountable. And then also our kids can learn how to treat others well through that. Mm-hmm. And so that was really important. Just one warning here. Oh, sorry. Another thing that's hugely important, was so helpful for us and continues to be, is also getting wise counsel from people who are further along than you. I can't tell you how many times my husband and I, either him by himself or me by myself or us together, we've just not known what to do, how to move forward. And we've humbled ourselves. We've asked for help. And it's really been life-changing for us and life-saving. And so it requires humility. It's embarrassing. Sometimes you have to be ready to hear things you don't want to hear. But it has made all the difference in raising our children. And so just a final thought about that. One thing we have to be careful of in our society, it's getting further and further away from God's truth, and that's the norm. And so you really want to be careful what you're listening to from the culture, because in a lot of cases, what it's telling you is true and right and good is in direct contrast to what God is saying. And so early on, from day one, my husband and I declared that our kids were not going to be guinea pigs. Like, we are adamant that our kids are not going to be cultural guinea pigs. In other words, we're not going to do this, like, this is the new way to raise your kids, or the new, you know, all these new ideas and thoughts are coming out. Mm-hmm. And we just decided, you know what? My kids aren't going to be the guinea pig for this new idea. And so we made a commitment that we were really going to do the tried and true biblical ideas from the Lord and really seek his help. And if we're the only ones doing it, then so be it. But we want to do what we know over time is going to be successful. And so that's the wisdom portion.
That's super helpful. One thing that Sam just touched on really quickly, in just that getting wise counsel means humbling yourself, is someone reminded me again this week, and I was telling my kids, one of the biggest ways God works in our life, and one of the biggest ways you'll grow and I grow, is through correction. And that's really a bummer. It is. It's a bummer. Like, my kids hate it. I see it on their faces. They hate it, but I do too. I just hide it better. And so, like, the reality is, and that's okay, because typically you're not going to learn by, oh yeah, I already knew that, or that someone's patting you on the back saying good job. It's typically you're hitting your head against a wall because something you're doing didn't work, mm-hmm. or pan out, and you have to be corrected, whether it's by the Lord, whether it's by people, but he's going to use people a lot. And so, in understanding, I had three parts. We all have this. Okay. There are three parts just, that I thought through, or tip. Originally I was going to do just understanding your kids. Because you really do have to have, understanding of them to be able to train them. You have to have understanding of them to help them grow. If you don't, then it's going to be a really hard journey. but as I was looking at understanding more and what it means here in this passage in Proverbs, what it's talking about is also just good sense. And really, good sense has to start way back here. It doesn't even matter that I understand and love my child dearly. That is not going to innately make me do good by them. I actually won't, because I'm a sinner. They have a sinner raising them, so I'm not going to do good by them on my own. And so where the good sense starts with is just understanding the Lord and his ways. And in our house, we're constantly having to say, okay, well, let's look at what God says about that. Yeah. Or I'm in a stage where, actually, maybe I've been in this stage for longer than I want to admit. I'm in a stage where I feel like my fuse is really short right now. Mm-hmm. And so I'm forever saying, that wasn't like God. God's not like that. That is not God's way. God's way would have been, and I need to ask God for help on that right now. And so we're having to reference that, God's ways, all the time. But that assumes I know his ways. And it also assumes that I'm in contact with him enough that he can correct me in the middle of it, or I'll just skim right through. I may even kind of have a thought of, oh, probably wasn't great, but then I'll just skate past it. And so, in Psalms 119:73, it says, you made me and you created me. Now give me the sense to follow your commands. And that's just, that's in the Living Translation, but I loved it. Like, just give me the sense. You have enough sense to do what you say. And then I didn't put it on your outline, but in Deuteronomy 4:9, I feel like it really outlines our task as parents. It says, be careful and watch yourself closely so that you do not forget all that you have seen and all that your heart has learned. And be careful then to impart all of these things to your children. Mm-hmm. And so what God is asking is you are in a vital relationship with Him, in a living relationship with God. And as He corrects you, as He encourages you, as He teaches you, you're just turning around and teaching that to them in the moment, not waiting for them to be old enough, not waiting for them like this incredible moment where no one's speaking at dinner and no one's screaming and crying. Cause that's not getting it for in my stage. That is not happening right now ever. So when I keep holding those moments for this like really special coffee outing or a silent dinner, it's just not going to happen. And so in the moment I'm having to say, okay, gather up. Gather up. Here's what God is teaching me. Here's what God is saying. You know what? That was wrong. Or you know what I'm actually struggling with right now? Trusting God with. And my attitude stinks because I'm inside. I'm in turmoil and has nothing to do with all of y'all. Mm-hmm. But I'm in turmoil because I'm having a really hard time trusting God with. Let's pray and ask for God's help. And let's actually, what does God say? What does God say He will do for me in this particular scenario, whether it's relationships or whatnot? And I have to remind them of that. And it has to be in the moment because they're all experiencing me being in turmoil. I just don't know why. And it may be them. It may not be. And so, if you understand God's ways, then you're going to do them is the assumption. Mm-hmm. The assumption in the scripture is you don't just know, you do. So if you know them, then we do them, but we need to do them out loud. And that actually is practice. That's not natural. Some of you, that may be really natural for him. That may be really organic and easy. Others of you, it's just going to have to be learning. I love organic relationships, but I've also realized I like to be asked questions. And if not, then I'm in my head and I'm in my head a lot. And so I'll just be quiet in my head until people ask me questions. And then I have a lot to say, but my kids, unless it's bedtime, are not asking me like deep questions, yeah. You know, throughout the day to draw me out so I can tell them everything that God's doing in my life. That's just not happening. And so I have to learn like, okay, where do I put this? How do I get this out to them? And so one question for each of these, I had a question for y'all is just, asking yourself, okay, then how am I connecting with God right now? Because that's going to look really different in every stage, but you have to be connecting with Him to actually be learning His ways and doing His ways or you'll forget. That's what we do. We forget. And that's what Deuteronomy 4:9 is reminding you is don't forget. Like do not, God did not act on your behalf so that you could enjoy it in that moment. God acted on your behalf so that you would tell all the generations to come. And He acted on your behalf so that He would firm up your faith. And if He's using that to firm up your faith, then you need to turn around and pour that out. And that's really what our task is turning around and pouring it out. And so, that goes into the next point. But one thing I wanted to just say on that too is, my lack of connecting with God or my connecting with God is going to directly influence how my home goes. And so if you've ever looked at your kids, and there are several things I look at my children and think, I genuinely don't know where that came from. Like, I don't know why they do that. I don't think that's me. I don't think that's my husband. Mm-hmm. That's just all of them. And then we'll get to that later. They are unique beings.
Yeah.
But there are plenty of things in this stage that I'm experiencing with my kids that I have even heard myself say, I don't know why you think that's okay. And then I'm like, oh, it's because I think that's okay. Because I'm doing it, but I think they're not watching. Or yeah. I'm doing it and I'm setting the tone of my home, but I'm not really realizing how much they are just soaking that up. Mm-hmm. And so Harold Bullock, who planted our church, and then this church was a plant. Our church came out of there, so essentially like a grandparent church in Texas. One of the things he says over and over is if you want your kids or anyone you invest in to bleed something, then you have to hemorrhage it. And so it literally is like in your home, yes, you're the thermostat. You're all those things you've heard. You set the temperature, the tone, all that. But whatever you want your kids, if you want your kids to be patient, then you are hemorrhaging patience. I mean, over the top. And if you've seen this, I'm not this person, mm-hmm. but I have kids in the States. I am not a preschool teacher, and they are precious. People that are like mm-hmm. wired for that, they are a different being than me, and I wish I was that. It would make my home life so much easier because I'm like real like cut and dry practical. And preschool teachers are like, they just gush everything they say. Mm-hmm. I mean, if they say it's snack time, they're like, it's snack time, you know, and everyone's like, yay! And my kids love them. Those are the people that babysit my kids.
Everyone's looking at me.
You know, like, and those people, like, my kids are like, oh my gosh, when those people come into my house and I'm like, that's weird. They don't respond like that to me when I walk in. But I don't bleed certain things. I mean, I don't hemorrhage them.
Yeah.
And you do have to. Like, so when you feel like, my gosh, I feel like I said that. We're going to say it 50,000 more times probably just today. But you really, like, what you want them to get, it's like you are on stage. And, like, just on stage, like, you play up all the makeup. You over-dramatize. That's what you're doing in parenting. You're, if it is important, then you need to over-dramatize it in your home. And then they might kind of get it. And they might bleed it a little bit. And that's just going into your role. Your role is you and your husband and you, if you're married, would figure this out. If you're not, you, no matter what, you essentially are running the home. And a really helpful book I read this last year is called Eve in Exile, but it's talking about how far we've gotten from women, what women's role in the home is. And it's a long time back. And if you love reading about feminism, history, whatnot, it's all at the beginning. You can also mm-hmm. skip that part and just get into the practical part of the book. But one of the things that has come over time is two really dichotomies of acting like women are really frail and fragile and, you know, like that need to be come in and be saved. And that was actually the start of feminism, is pretending like women like need someone to wait on them and they just faint at a moment's notice. And if they didn't have a knight in shining armor, then where would they be? And the reality is God has made you to work really hard. Mm-hmm. And that's a tough pill to swallow because the other part of the culture right now says, man, if you can't drink a glass of wine at night and get in a bath, then I don't know how you're going to survive the next day of motherhood. You know, yeah. And that's just not true either. And so what God has done is he has wired you, and you can look at Proverbs, you can look at Proverbs 31 and see this. I love that if you've ever looked at the Amplified version of any passage. I love Proverbs 31 in the Amplified because what it tells you is, what does that actually mean? When it says that word, you're like, I have to make all my own clothes and sourdough. Like, to really be a no, you don't. You don't, but you could, and that would be great too. But what it tells you is what each of those words that it's meaning or saying what they actually mean. And it will give you several synonyms of what the biblical context of the Amplified of the verse was. But what you see in Proverbs 31 is not that you have to make all your own clothes or that you have to buy silk and velvet for your children. But what it's trying to show you is you were made for this, but you were also mm-hmm. made to run very, very hard. You are not frail. You can work into all hours of the night. You can get up early and you can work very hard. And the analogy she kept using throughout the book is, so much so this is true that what the picture is like you have a racehorse who's made, this is all they've ever done. They've raced all their lives. And then you try to put them in your backyard as like a dog, like your pet that you just go out there and they have a little area to walk around and you pet them and that's their life. And that's what it would be like to rein in a woman who was really walking with God. You would have to rein her in and just hold her down for her to be this picture that we have of women today. But that's not what we're made for. Made to run really hard. And so in Proverbs, it says, the wise woman builds her house, and this is the Amplified, on a foundation of godly precepts, and her household thrives. And so what you're doing is you're not collecting, like Sam said, all the newest fads, gentle parenting, or all whatever it might be right now. You're not collecting all those. You're asking, what does God say, and how do we do it? What does God say, and how do we do it? And that's for everything. That's for how your kids relate to their teachers at school. That's for how your kids relate to each other. That's for how your kids keep their room clean and what you do when they don't, how you respond. And so what this is telling me is consistently, what am I telling them, but also what am I doing? And this is how I build my home, is I keep hitting things that I don't know what to do. I have a daughter who cannot keep her room clean to save her life. And that has been a point of contention, but I also am having to ask a lot of moms, like Sam said, like, is this a hill I die on? And when do I die on it? Because I don't want her to be a woman who's not a blessing to her husband one day. I don't want her to be a nightmare to her college roommates. I don't want her to even be a nightmare to her other sister right now. And then there's also the fact that I hate saying it because I like clean. Mm-hmm. So I'm trying to set that aside and then also teach her how to host, how to be a blessing to others, how she can think more. But she's also not me. She is not wired like me at all. And it genuinely doesn't mess with her brain to have this. And so I don't want her to also be like, this is how we do things until you move out of my house and have to go get counseling. Mm-hmm. You know, so I don't want to do that either. Yeah. So I'm trying to ask, so what is God actually, what is God, not Jen, and my own desire to have peace in my mind, which means everything's picked up at all times. What does that look like for her to walk with God based on who she is? And do it in a way that pleases God. And how do I respond to it when she doesn't? But my responses are not typically what I think God'd be like, got that one. That was good. So I'm like, I don't want to see you until it's clean. You know, I'm pretty sure that's not what he says to me. And there's a lot of responses I've chosen that are not godly. And so this is what I'm going back to all the time is, so what does God say? And so one of the things, the question I had here is just, what, how can you take a step forward right now in an area of your life and deciding to trust God more? And then what would it look like maybe to provide a godly structure in your home? Because the second half of the verse says, but the foolish one who lacks spiritual insight, that's the foolishness. You just don't know what God says.
Yeah.
Like I'm doing what I'm doing because that's what my mom did. I have a friend who did that. I saw a gal on Instagram do that and it looked really cute. Her family looked happy. And so I'm doing it. But rather, the spiritual insight is, so what does God say? And do it. And keep doing that. Because if not, it says, she will tear her home down with her own hands by ignoring godly principles. That's how you tear your house down. You just ignore what God says. It's probably not because you knew it and chose to ignore it. It's because you didn't know it. And so we have to know it and to be able to do it. And one of the... in that, what does that practically look like? Two things I wrote down is we have to, one of our charging hard is subduing. The word to subdue means to bring under control by exertion of the will. And so what you're trying to do is figure out, it's really easy, like another thing that you'll see all the time in culture right now is to like, it's funny to be like the hot mess express. But it's not actually funny. It is. Don't, I've used that phrase. But it actually isn't funny in light of what God says because you're the one that's subduing. That's not like, oh, thank God dad's home and he can rein this all in. No, that's actually my job. My job is to rein this all in so that he comes home to peace. Now, does he have a role over all of us? Absolutely. Does he have things that they fear with him that they may not fear in the same with him? Sure. His role is very different than mine, but mine is he's out there in the world conquering things, then coming home and leading our family. I am to keep this house running and to keep it running well and to keep it running. Yes, for sure. He has all the input and whatnot into it, but I manage it and I keep it running. And when a CEO comes into a restaurant, he's not like, well, I've come in to just clean house now. If he has to, then that manager's on their way out because the manager's job is to keep that running smoothly. And that's my job, to keep things under control. And part of that though is that I am creating a really loving environment. That is part of the subduing, is that I subdue because the chaos is brought to peace by the way I love my kids and the way I teach them to love each other, the way I teach them to respond to authority. And all of those things, I'm bringing control into the home because what I'm doing is bringing in God's principles. The last thing I had for understanding is once I have created a tone, and I'm constantly doing this and redoing this in my home, is I also just really need to understand my children because I cannot parent them each the same way. you guys all know this. Mm-hmm. You know this, but then actually there's some skill. And that's what that, what Proverbs 31 is constantly talking about is this woman is not only a hard worker, she's incredibly skilled at what she puts her hand to. And so, in Proverbs 31, 17, 26, and 27, I love that it says she equips herself. And again, it's in, Amplified. She equips herself with strength, spiritual, mental, and physical fitness to make her arms strong for her God-given tasks. So I have to choose to equip myself for these, which means I have to choose to equip myself to know my kids. Mm-hmm. She opens her mouth in skillful and godly wisdom, and in teaching, the teaching of kindness is always on her tongue. And so that means also in the way I'm relating to them, they're not going to hear a word that I say if I'm not kind. And so as I come at them when they're really different than me, and a lot of my kids are, I have to be incredibly kind or I am just going to immediately shut down the doorway to their heart. And then it, in 27, it says, she looks well to how the things in her household are going, and she does not eat of the bread of idleness. And that's, again, just that running hard. So then that would mean that in understanding my kids, I'm going to have to really apply myself to this. It's not going to happen accidentally. And no one's going to try to get to know my kids the way I should. I can't ask. This is one of those things, like when Sam was talking, like some of these things you can like outsource. You can't outsource getting to know your kids. You're literally the only one that can do this. People can give you insight for sure. People have given us a lot of insight in mirrors, and that time with other people gives you a mirror. Yeah. Because your kid's very different at home than you see him with other people. And you're like, oh my word. You know? Mm-hmm. So it's actually very, very important to be with other people, because you realize like, oh, they like their siblings more than I realize because they're really unkind when they have to share or whatever it might be. And so the question here that I've had is just, who are my kids? And then what do I need to change about the way we approach things in our home in light of who they are? And that doesn't have to change the same for every kid. You may have some overarching, but you also just approach things differently. That's even true in our discipline. We have some overarching ways that we discipline, but I also have to discipline very differently. One of my kids, I could probably spank them. I could spank them so many times and they would say, they'd walk away and do the same thing 5 minutes later. But if I say, you know what, I'm going to have to pool the outings that we had with people this week in light of what you chose, then all of a sudden they're like, oh my gosh, you know, and that's huge. And with my other daughter, she'd be like, great, I love to be home. You know, like, and that would not be the right punishment for her, consequence for her. So in knowing them, 1 Thessalonians 5:14, someone gave me this verse in my 20s in relating to people, in helping them walk with God. But it recently was pointed out to me how helpful it is with our kids. And I don't know why I didn't ever make that connection. And so thought I'd share it with you, since I was so slow in getting on. But 1 Thessalonians 5:14 says, and we urge you, brothers and sisters, that you warn those who are idle and disruptive, you encourage the disheartened, and then you help the weak, and then you are patient with everyone. So you're hemorrhaging the patience with all of them. All the kids are going to need the patience. But what that verse is telling you is there are three things that your kids could be walking through. They're all going to dip in and out of these at all times. They could just be that they are just being contentious and rebellious. Mm-hmm. And when it says warn those, you are warning them verbally for sure. You're reminding them, this is not God's way. This is what is God's way. Here's what he really wants for you. Can you do that? Do you think you can do that next time? But then there's also going to be a lot of times that you're saying, and because you did not this time, we've already spoken that there is a consequence. You knew what you were doing, so there's a consequence for this. But then there's also times, and we can confuse these, where they're just disheartened. And you're going to see this, not always, but I feel like it works this way in our home. I'm going to see this better than my husband's going to see this because I'm with them all the time, because I'm a mom. There's just I feel like oftentimes he's looking at me like, what the heck? And his go-to, because he's coming in from outside thinking these kids have been trained all day long, so if they're acting like this, they probably need some sort of discipline. And a lot of times, like, you know what? Something is really grinding on them relationally with a friend, or they did not sleep last night. They were up over and over. So their, whatever, their behavior is not coming out of a just pure rebellious, I choose to not do what you say. They're just, they really actually need to be encouraged. Like, hey, I can see that this is hard for you. And we have to love our brother, or we have to love our sister. We need to treat them right and with gentleness and kindness, but it's seeming really hard. And then leaning into, how can I help you? How can I help you be, you need one of my kids. I'm like, do you want to go sell your bed for a minute? And she's like, yes, that's what she needs. And the other one's like, why do you hate me? And I'm like, so I don't even offer that. You know, it's like, do you want to just come sit with me for a moment and like, just get a breather? But then it also says, we also need to, when they're weak, we need to help them. And sometimes it's just that it's not I jump to this a lot, and this is where we flip roles, is my husband has to say, you are presuming they are so much more capable than they are. She is 7. He's constantly having to whisper that in my ear. She is 7 years old, sweetheart. And I'm like, okay. And I have to reel it in and operate not out of defiance. That's not what she's doing. She's actually just weak. She doesn't know how to do what I'm asking her well enough. And I'm coming at it like, do you remember I already taught you that yesterday? Let's go. Like, this train's moving, and you got to get on it. And he's having to tell me consistently, she's too little. Like, yes, she will do that one day, but not yet. And I'm like, oh, okay. Or my mom. My mom was in my house last week, and one of my kids, she had to remind me, that's the, like, going back to being young again that she's hitting in preteen. You know what that is, like, but you're getting really frustrated. But I'm like, oh, yeah. Or my mom, one of my best friends this week, they had our kids while we were out of town for the weekend, and they kept talking about how capable they were. And I said, okay, but do you just mean bossy by capable? Like, were they constantly getting in your circle? That's what you mean by capable, and you're trying to be really kind and spin it. And they're like, no, capable. I'm like, no, but see, here's why they aren't. And I'm telling her, like, this is what I'm struggling with. And she's like, that's what my 14-year-old son is struggling with right now, but your girls just turned 9 and 7. And I'm like, oh, okay. But I need that. Like, I need that mirror of, oh, they're weak. They're not defiant. They're weak here. And then they're also vastly different. So get to know them. And one of the things that's helped me, I love this, and you may not love this. I love personality profiles because I like to have, not because people have to stay in this category, but I love knowing people, and I love figuring out how people work. And that is I love that. All their wiring. Oh yeah, that makes sense. They would respond that way because this is how they're wired. And so there's a couple that are good personality profiles. Like, they're called Myers-Briggs for kids, and you can find them online, and you can take them really quick. And they're made for a parent to take for their kid. Those were extremely helpful as I was trying to help my kids in school, because I could see what was going to make their life light up and what was going to be like drudgery and some of the things like that. It just gave me a lot of insight to how to order our days based on who they were. And that was really help. But study them, figure out how they're gifted, figure out what you could do to help capitalize on that. One of my daughters loves to bake, and she's actually really good at it. And we've tried to replace things in our home with, like, not refined sugar, coconut sugar, high quality butter. So then this is like, when my husband tells me to reel in the finances, and I come home and she's made another cake, and I'm like, 60 pounds need to come off. I don't need a cake, for one. And two, I don't want messes, remember? And three, that butter is so stinking expensive. I'm like, and so I have to like go into the pantry for a moment. Remember, God really has gifted. I want her to grow in this. I really want to figure out ways. Now, are there some boundaries? Yes. And so that's what we can graciously talk through, is what does this need to look like, this love of cooking? When and how can you do that in a way that brings you still back under authority? But I don't want to just shut it down. But you want to figure out what are some things that they're good at, and how can I help them? Because what you're really doing is you're helping them not do the, like, not that you couldn't do this, but they're not getting to senior year and being like, well, I've got to get a gap year because all I've done is what my parents ever wanted me to do. I have no idea what I'm good at. No idea how God has made me and skilled me. So, yes, you are equipping them along the way. And we brought several things I can show you in a minute. You're equipping them for life, and you're praying for them along the way. And one thing that has been really helpful that I should have started 9 years ago that I started a few years ago. You don't have to do this. I have a couple of different ones even with me. You can find online like 31 days of things to pray for your kids, and typically they're pretty good. That's easy. Print it out, shove it in your journal, shove it in the front of your Bible, and whatever day of the month it is, that's what you pray for them. And if, as long as these are all good things. But I just decided like, okay, I'm just going to go Monday through Saturday and Sunday of the week and write out, what are the things I want to pray into my kids' lives? Well, it wasn't working out. Once we stopped nursing, sad. So once I stopped nursing, I realized I had stopped praying for my kids regularly because that's when I prayed for them. So whoever nursed the least got prayed for the least. So that's how I was like, oh no. When I got a few years past nursing, like, what am I doing? I'm only praying for them now, like when they're on the verge of death with me, like when I'm about to kill them, like, Lord, help them grow in this quickly. You know, and I don't want it to only those be my only prayers for them. So I had just like, okay, what do I want to be true for my kids? And I just broke it up. But that makes my life manageable. I know if I open my journal and I'm having a quiet time on Wednesday, this is what I'm praying. And I had already wanted to pray these things for them. So be praying for them and then encourage them specifically, because God loves us very specifically. He knows us. He has made us very different. God has made us, when it talks about fearfully and wonderfully made, that translation is actually, it's talking about that he has made you vastly different than everyone else. He has wired you exactly how he wants you, but you're different. You're very unique. And so call those things out for them. Comment on what you're seeing, especially in the area of kindness. If you want kind kids, then comment on how they are kind. Constantly, oh my gosh, like there's my husband even, this is a focus right now in our house, and he said, I want you to play down everything else. I was like, okay. So I'm trying to like play down all the other things. Like, hey, no, that's great. I'm really glad you kept your room clean. Like I really want them to do that more often though. But the kindness aspect, just that is what we are praising. How they are kind, and they act kind in really different ways. And so just calling that out, because we want that to continue. But the Bible talks about them being a gift from the Lord. They're arrows in your quiver, and they're wonderfully, which complexly made. And so figure out who each of your kids are. Make it your goal. I mean, this is what we're doing. These are our job right now. Figure them out. Know them backwards and forwards. So that when things come up, when they're going to, all these relational conflicts with other kids, you're not like, well, that's odd. I wonder where that came from. You know what this kid's heart is. You know what they're aiming for, what they're going after more than what maybe one of your others is going after. And you can kind of help them then process their sin in light of what they were trying to get and what God would rather them have. And it's not a generalized, this is what God wants for us, but this is, I know you really want this. I know you really want to be a part of the in group. One of my other girls could care less. She wants to have nothing to do with anyone if they might be getting in trouble. And the other one's like, well, I don't want to be left out. And so we have to, you know, approach those differently. So know them, and it'll help you guide them, and help the understanding will help you in your skillfulness in your home. So
how to fill your house with rare and beautiful treasures. First, we have to have the wisdom. We have to have God's wisdom, and we have to commit to adopting to that and adapting to his ways. And then, so that's kind of like the big kind of overlapping umbrella. And then we get a little bit more specific into understanding. And Jen went all through that. There has to be some understanding of God's ways, of my role, and of our children and who they are, and how we can come alongside the Lord in raising these precious gems. You know, they're ultimately, they're God's, they're not ours. And so we are working with him. And so that brings us into the most narrowly focused, the knowledge. Okay, so we have our perspective, we have our why, and now we're getting into the how. Well, literally, practically, how do you train up children? And there's so many things here. We're not going to get into all of them, so you guys, you know, can ask questions if you want. But Proverbs 22:6 says, train your child in the way he should go, and when he is older, he will not depart from it. Mm-hmm. This is not, a lot of times people use this as kind of like a safe for, well, if I tell them about Jesus and if I train them in the way of the Lord, then when they're older, like they'll, you know, they won't walk away from the Lord. That's a piece of it, but that word training here means more in line with what Jen was sharing, training, knowing who your kid is and training them up to be, to take their place into society, in society under God's care and, you know, kind of with the mindset that they're there to advance his kingdom. Mm-hmm. It's an others focus, not a self focused. And so some things that kind of came straight to mind. The first one is we really want to train our kids to have a heart for God and a heart for others. So, one of the disciples asked Jesus, well, what's the greatest commandment? And he said, love the Lord your God with all your heart, soul, and mind. And then the second greatest commandment is like it, love others as yourself. So in a nutshell, our assignment for ourselves, for our kids is love God and love people. And so that's been our mantra growing up. We've just thought, okay, how in every situation can we teach our kids what it looks like to love God and love people? And so that's kind of like the caveat that we work under. Like I told you, my kids are older. I'm sitting here and I'm listening to Jen and I'm thinking, oh, I remember that. I'm laughing at her dinner example because you see my kids, we can have a quiet dinner. But we cannot have a quiet dinner cleanup because my kids are assigned with dinner cleanup and we have yet to have a night where there is not strife revolved around dinner cleanup. And so I'm just like, it's just shifted. They're fighting over the dinner cleanup and it's like, Lord, help us. But that actually brings me to, in hindsight, now that I am on this side of it, looking back, I see now how incredibly vital the heart attitudes are and how they really actually can be the main thing. So, I don't have time to get into the heart attitudes, but it's something that our network of churches commits to. And it's basically seven attitudes. The Bible actually has over 59, they're called one another's. It's a command on how we are to treat one another. And so what our network of churches have done is we have narrowed those down into seven main categories of this is how we treat one another in this context. And now that my kids are older, it is so clear the heart attitudes that we have focused on in our home. I very clearly see what we made big rocks and I very clearly see what we didn't spend enough time on. Because my kids live that out. The heart attitudes that we have really focused on have stuck, and the ones that we didn't spend as much time on, they're really lacking and we have reaped what we've sowed on both accounts. And so, you know, I'm at the stage of parenting where I see both the good and the bad harvest. And I'm so thankful that God is good and he's divine and he's sovereign and he is working in my kids' hearts outside of me. Because the fact of the matter is we can have all of these ideas and these thoughts, these methods, but I'm still me. And me is a sinner. Me is selfish and my kids are selfish and they're sinners. And so it's not going to be perfect and we still need God's grace. And, you know, my kids, they have good and they have bad in them, just like me. And so I do want to say, especially for those of you who have been around CIV for a while and you understand, you know, the heart attitudes, I cannot encourage you enough on this side of parenting to really focus on that. Like heart attitude number one, put the goals and interests of others above your own. What does that look like inside our family? And how do I train that? I love what Jen said about the hemorrhaging because that's true. One of my regrets having passed the stage of parenting is to realize that I, you know, I swung more on the training side than the exampling, modeling side. And so because I was so focused on training my kids to be responsible, take care of themselves, but, you know, we were lacking inside our family in the putting the goals and interests of others above my own, because they've been trained to take care of their own stuff, not to, you know what, let me help. I'm going to just do this for you. I'm going to help you, because in my rigidness, I'm not going to do that for you because you've been trained. Mm-hmm. It's your, you know, and so, but what that has, how that has played out within the category of the heart attitudes is that they focus on, that's not my monkey. That's not my job. And hence that's why dinner cleanup is not fun in our house. So I want to share openly and honestly with you guys to just say, hey, my kids are great. A lot of you guys know them. I love them, but I'm at the stage where I can say, hey, here's what we did well and here's what we didn't do well. And we have the harvest to show both. And thank you, Lord, that He is sovereign and He loves my kids and He has a plan beyond me for them. And that's my hope and my prayer. When I see, you know, when I'm faced with, wow, we did not do this well. And they've suffered because of it. Or their character is lacking because of it. And so I just go to the Lord and I just thank Him so much for His grace and His mercy and that He loves my kids more than I do. And that, I think, and that, you know, maybe I'm getting into the older kids section here, but one thing that has been super helpful for me, and it's helpful for this age of parenting too, is our job is not to have our kids to perfection by the time they're 18. That is not our job. They have a whole lifetime of growing once they pass 18. So that even goes into some of the stuff that Jen was sharing about the helping versus, you know, disciplining. Our kids, they're still so young and they're not gonna, I had to stop the expectation that my kids have to be ready for the rest of their lives. The second they turn 18 or they're out the door. No, I wasn't. Nobody else was. But I just need to do my due diligence with where they're at for the time that I have, trusting God with the other part. So anyway, so heart attitudes, on this side of it, I see how even if you just focus on doing the heart attitudes in your home, training, teaching, modeling, you're gonna be set up for really good godly parenting. And then the last one is discipline. A very, very powerful cultural parenting plan right now is to not discipline your children. And, that's just the opposite of what the Bible says. Mm-hmm. The Bible talks so much about discipline, even for us. It says that God, because He loves us, disciplines us. Mm-hmm. And we also, out of love for our children, need to discipline them. The Bible, and there's so many verses, I just picked two, but Hebrews 12:11 says, "For the moment, all discipline seems painful rather than pleasant, but later it yields the peaceful fruit of righteousness to those who have been trained by it." If we are not disciplining our kids, then we are, we're actually setting them up for failure. And so you need to be very careful about discipline. My husband and I followed a very specific plan where, you know, we kind of had to remove ourselves from anger. We disciplined for rebellion only, you know, and then there were times when we had to clear things up, like, hey, I just jumped to a conclusion and I disciplined you, you know, or whatever. But, and then, you know, Proverbs 13:24, whoever spares the rod hates his son, but he who loves him is diligent to discipline him. And so, it's really important that we have a discipline plan and that, you know, you agree upon, but we, you know, the Bible says we're selfish. We're born selfish. We're naturally selfish. Our hearts can't be trusted in that. We have to train as parents. We're instructed to train selfishness out of our children. And that means it's a lot of work. And especially at this age, it's a lot of discipline. And mm-hmm. so I love what Jen said about really filling a house with love, because by really pouring in love to your children, the discipline comes really yeah. well in that, because they know that you love them. They know you care about them. And within those boundaries, they're safe. Yeah. They actually feel very safe in that. And so, you can share some more too.
Yeah. I want to give you guys time for questions because I've gone long, but there's several things here that one, what Sam was saying and just seeing gaps. I think one of the things, because I realized I made this shift in my house of going to training, and I've dipped in and out of it, heavy training rather than really what it is instead of discipleship and calling training discipleship. Mm-hmm. But I don't train my kids the way I would train someone I'm discipling, because when I'm discipling someone, I have things in mind of like, a dear friend of our church says constantly that we put coins of essentially kindness in a bank, and then we buy trust with that kindness, so that when we have to correct, we have built up so much trust with the person because we've just been putting in banking kindness left and right, that they want to hear it. They know where we're coming from. That kindness is a pad for our correction. And when I'm discipling people, I'm constantly telling them what I'm learning. I'm directly teaching, here's what I'm learning, but here's what God. And I'm passing that on, and I'm giving all sorts of grace. And I have this very clear picture, and it is different, but yet it's not as different as we think. I have this very clear picture of I'm not responsible for the end you. God is. And I am going to be faithful to pour all I can into you. But in the end, I'm not responsible for who you turn out to be, because God is. And then with my kids, I have had a very different perspective, partially out of arrogance and then partially out of just like, oh, this is a different role. I'm mom. And I saw someone a lady who writes apologetics books for parents to help their kids grow in apologetics, made a statement this morning that I thought, oh, that's what it is. That's what I'm experiencing, is that we've focused so much on Christian character that we've actually forgotten Christian discipleship. And when we're getting these kids that know these things Christian character-wise, like I know how to do things with excellence, I leave things better than I found them, but yet can't navigate really how to walk with God in different scenarios because they don't know what really God does mm-hmm. in his ways, that's where we've erred on the training of just Christian character rather than discipling them. And so one of the things, there's a lot of resources. And what I listed here was just some of the resources that are available within the network to grab a hold of. One of which people have helped us with is just, like Sam said, you've got to know where your kids are going, is creating launch goals. So when they are 18, they're not going to be baked thoroughly, but these are some things we want them, big categories and then breakdowns of how are we getting there, that we want them to be true of them by the time we launch them. But what I'd encourage you guys to do is God is faithful and he is growing you if you'll cooperate with him. And so what you're doing is just turning around and giving that to your kids. And I meant to grab that as I was thinking about this last night, is one of the things I started doing is I often am sitting in church on Sunday mornings thinking, oh, you know what? Here's what I need to change because of this. Here's what my kids need that I haven't told them about this category yet. I need to tell them that, and then it will get lost if I don't. So what we've made a habit of doing is, and we don't do it all the time. Trust me, we don't do it all the time. Is we have a journal, and their journal mimics mine. And I'm a drawer. If I draw things, I can make more sense of them anyways. So their journal is like as if I was discipling someone when I was in college. Let me help you know, you're a brand new Christian. Here's how you walk with God. And so what their journal is like, here's how we walk with God. So in their journal, we have like a picture of big rocks. And we've talked about what are the big rocks? And we did the whole big rocks demonstration at breakfast, like how they don't fit. So then what are big rocks? What do we need to focus on, girls? And so then they drew that in their notes. And then we drew the heart diagram, that what is in our heart is how we get our behavior. It's not surprising when you yank the toy out of your sister's hand. That shouldn't surprise you because we go back to the desires that are in our heart. So we drew a diagram of the heart that's within the network that we've seen all the time. Like this is the good and bad that comes out of our heart. What does that look like? And we just keep marching through. But what it's come out of is like on Sunday mornings, when I'm like, oh, shoot, that's a weak spot for me. I need to grow in that. Let me like think through that. We do that in our journals the next morning. Hey girls, there's something I really need to know. Let's talk about this. And we draw it in our journals and we talk through it, because that's what I would do if I sat down with, at coffee with a 20-something year old who was saying, hey, how do I walk with God? I just became a Christian. I'm like, oh, let me. But that's what I need to do with my 9 and 7 year old. That's what I'm doing with them, just on their scale. And so I'd encourage you to do that. There's so many resources that are easily available within the network. If you ask the moms, like, I need something, there's a lot. And so what, before we break for questions, I brought a few of them because I like to have things on my refrigerator ready to grab, or I have a notebook that like we bring out in the mornings. I want them there. So, this just goes through like steps to train your child. This is from Deborah Bullock. She wrote an amazing book that if you want to read a really fast, helpful read on parenting, it's called Parenting, Is There an App for That? So helpful. Yeah. You can get it on Amazon. Yes. Super easy read, incredibly practical. But this comes from that, and she just talks about how to actually build into your kids and kindness being the very first step. That really opens the door to their hearts. And then just them helping them get a firm grip. One of the things that Sam was a part of, my kids were too young, is that an overarching thing with our kids is we want them to have strong minds, soft hearts, and skilled hands. So I'm constantly thinking when I'm trying to understand my kids, I really do want them to be thinkers. I don't want to shut that down by saying, stop asking questions. That, like, if it's an inappropriate time, that's disrespectful or that. I do want to train them to have a strong mind. I need it within bounds. I do want them to have skilled hands. That's the baking. We're doing all the baking. And I want them to have really tender hearts too. So I have to be kind towards them, because when I say that they have really hard hearts, it's typically because I've been so harsh with them. And so this just talks about kind of just some of the same, getting firm grip on their responsibilities. These are really easy. Your hands are always with you. So if you don't have the paper, no problem, because we always have our two hands. And that's why, Deborah Bullock, again, same author, came up, and pastor's wife of Harold, came up with these. Your hands are always with you. And so these teach us why we trust God and then why we obey him. And they're the same exact things on each hand. But we trust him because he is strong. We trust him because he's real. We trust him because he is all powerful. Good. We trust him because he's good and because he's kind. And so it goes through all of the, and because he knows, I'm sorry. You can do this easily with your kids. And so I just wanted to put a few resources in your hand literally in your hands really quickly. And then I have a few other things that I brought with me that I've listed there, but I just want to encourage you guys. There's probably not something that you're going to hit that you're like, this is new to me and my family. No, there's probably something out there, and I love like short, easy things. Mm-hmm. And so like my girls are even doing this at Sunday school right now. So we have this everywhere, and it's just the enemy thoughts of it's too hard. It's not fair. It's not what I want. I'm too tired. I'm the only one. Problem is I also face all these. So this is perfect. Yeah. Because in discipling, I don't pretend like you can't just be too tired. We have school. You know, we have school. No, I'm often too tired. I get it. I'm tired too. Let's ask God for help right now. And this is what God says he will give us. And then let's try to be faithful. Let's do the next thing. And so just having things to reference that you can quickly pull, ask the other moms. There's probably something for it. Or email one of us, and there's probably something that you can grab because you're not doing this alone. So, yeah. But we wanted to give time for questions as well. So any, if you guys have questions, if something didn't make sense, also please ask that.
My like gut instinct is just to like overreact and like immediately like with them both standing there like, well, why did you hit your sister and blah blah blah, and then I can usually see later on that probably wasn't the best plan of attack, but if you were in that scenario, what would be like some things you would like come to help you approach the situation with like wisdom and kindness and helping them navigate that?
Can we answer first, or do you have something?
I have something really quick. I is not me. I'm the overreactor. Right there with you. Why would I overreact? No one in my family does. And then when I see them do it, I'm like, oh, there's me. Like, why did you respond to his, like, frustration that way? And then I'm like, oh, because I responded to yourself. Like, okay. But one of the things that one of the moms in our community consistently says, and she's very wise, is she'll even say it to her daughter, who's a little older than mine, is, you know what? I understand that you probably acted that way, because why wouldn't you? That makes sense for where you're at. And she just immediately, and I'm always like, that is not my approach. I've had to learn that. My approach is, you should have known better. Mm-hmm. And I come at that because I said it one time, I remember. And mm-hmm. I consistently do that. And it's really, it's not God's grace. That's not how he does with me, I can promise you. And so having to say that, you know what? I understand why that came really easily to you. But also one of the things that another mom had modeled for me is when I'm most worked up, to talk really quietly. She's like, they need to learn to take you seriously because you're speaking quietly, not because you're yelling. And because I don't want to yell in our home, and then I don't want them yelling at each other, but it doesn't work if I yell over them and then tell them not to yell. Stop yelling! Why is everyone? So I also, like, I realized no one has ever corrected me outside of my parents, and I mean, they do what I did, or I'm doing, in front of someone else. And so we're, my husband and I are trying so hard to work on, it's like calling them aside individually and giving them a chance outside of the crowd and without someone interrupting them and jumping in and saying, no, that's not what happened. And say, like, can you just tell, and not presuming anything. And I'm so working on my face. That's huge. If I enter a room where I feel like someone has already made their judgment on me, I'm like, and I might even tell them things that aren't true. Like, yeah, I did that because I really hate her. But I'm just like, what are you thinking I'm going to say? I'll just say that because I'm such a people pleaser. And so I want to have a face that, hey, you know what? Can you tell me what just happened there? Can you help me understand how you saw what happened and why it happened? And that opens up a whole part of them that I'm stunned at. And I have to be so careful because one of my girls is super intuitive. And she can read all over, I'm pretending and I'm actually about to kill you. You know, like she can read that. And so she will just say, I don't know, I don't like her. You know, like she'll play up because she does it. She knows I'm mad. And so trying to take that piece out. And also, this is so hard. This is where we're at right now, Katie. Having to tell myself, why the heck am I mad at them? I'm mad at them for sinning. That's a bummer. Mm-hmm. Because if God is mad at me every time I'm sinning, that's really unfortunate. Because I'm in the process of sinning right now as I'm trying to train my kid. So I'm like, So I have to keep asking, why am I mad? Why? And it is, you know why you're mad, because your goals, that's why we get mad. My goal's not met. What was my goal? To have everyone always get along and not act like the sinner that you are. Oh, well, that's unfortunate. So I just having to talk myself into reality in that moment, like Sam said earlier, like removing myself, because then all of a sudden I approach them like I actually love them, and I do. I don't know if that's
helpful. Yeah, I mean, I won't add more to that, but just, it's so normal and it's so natural. I mean, even my big kids still fight. Mm-hmm. And it looks very different, but there's times when I almost am laughing because it's so ridiculous. And, and it's like, you can't even get to the bottom of it if you tried. And so I think just having a protocol of, of a separation, mm-hmm. like, okay. And you're going to have to tell them first, like, this is the protocol. When you guys are fighting like this and there's no reasoning anymore, you guys, you know, this is your area. That's your area. You guys are going to have to go there. And for this amount of time until, and for me, that's not even a punishment. I actually, right now, my boys, you know, they're teenagers. And so they get into where they're like fighting, you know, they're just wrestling, and then it gets out of hand. And what I understand is that there's just too much testosterone going on in my house, and it can't be released in this way. And so now my kids are older. So I kick them out. I'm like, okay, you guys have to do, you know, we have like a 2.5 mile loop in our neighborhood. And so I just make them go do that. And they think it's a punishment. And I'm like, this is not a punishment. this is what you need. Mm-hmm. You guys cannot fight inside my house anymore. You know, so I think for me, it's just realizing too, like, this is normal. The fighting mm-hmm. is normal. And I think I thought, well, you know, I'm going to be so intentional with my parenting and my kids aren't going to fight with each other because they're going to know how to put the goals and interests of others above mm-hmm. their own. And they're learning. They're learning how to mm-hmm. get along by not getting along. Yeah. And so a lot of times they just have to get away from each other. And then you just say, we're not going to fight about this anymore. And then you can kind of do like mm-hmm. some of the training pieces after that. Look for patterns. Like, this is a pattern.
Yeah.
You tend to not want to share. You know, mm-hmm. you have a pattern of not sharing.
Yeah.
Or you have a pattern of taking without asking.
Yeah.
And you can kind of deal with those things on a separate outside of the fight mm-hmm. thing. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I do. I just have like a separation protocol. Like, it's done. We're not going to talk about it anymore. Just mm-hmm. go to your, and then when you've calmed down, then come back and join in or, you know, mm-hmm. whatever.
And not letting them bring it to me, because I want them to learn how to keep relationships clear on their own and not need me for everything. So if it's low key enough and they come and tell me something that they want me to start solve with the squabble, I'd say, oh, what did she say when you brought that to her? And they're like, well, no, I didn't. I'm telling you. I'm like, oh, I'm not a part of this, because I'm not a part of this until she refuses to be a part of it. So you need to go take that to her. And remember how I want to take things to people? It's really kind. You want her to want to hear what you say. And they're like, because that's so much harder. Like, they want, that what I've realized in our house is they're airing to me mm-hmm. so that I will step in so they yeah. can lazily not handle, they're not doing mm-hmm. the hard attitudes.
Yeah.
I don't want to clear up relationship. That's too hard and awkward. And it is. We all know we've had to do it with other adults. So you go back and try that out. You're not going to get it perfect, but here's some suggestions. Go try that. And if it doesn't work, can you come back to me and let me know? And that's helped too, because then all of a sudden they're like, oh. And a lot of times we'll stand in the room silent for a long time, like, I actually don't want to interact with you anymore. If I have to like do right, what's right by you. And then eventually they can't like
yeah.
stay away from each other. But
yeah, I say the same thing in a not quite as gentle way. They'll come to, hey mom, blah, blah, blah. And then I'll be like, you know, I'm like, yeah, what's up? And then I just say, oh, I'm sorry. I didn't realize that you were coming to tattle right now. I'm actually not available for tattling. So if there's something else you needed from me, then we can talk. But if you're just here to tattle, you need to, you know, you need to go talk to your brother about that mm-hmm. or whatever. And so, yeah, but that really is something where you, as they get a little bit older, you know, it's harder to do that with like a 2-year-old,
sure,
but you can, yeah. mm-hmm. you know, you can start that way, you know,
yeah.
and it, yeah. Hmm. We're helping our kids not triangulate.
Yes.
You know, where it's like, no, if you have a problem, you need to go to them.
Yes.
And, yeah. And sometimes they do need help sometimes. Mm-hmm. So, but.
I have a question. In my home, especially around the next time, it seems like all of my verbal kids, not all, many of my verbal kids. And I, sometimes I wonder if it almost seems like it's like a habit, like a habit. Because one of them, it just is like, he'll complain that he wants something else the next day. If it is that particular thing that he's saying, he's saying, next day, he's saying he doesn't want anyone to do that. That's what he wants. He's a really cute kid.
Mm-hmm.
That happens. we have tried, like, teaching them a verse about complaining. And it feels like it's double the habit.
Mm.
Yeah. Are you wanting me to answer? Okay. Mm-hmm. I'm like, you're looking at me like, you know, I think it was in the same book, Even Exile, mm-hmm. where she talks about, is this the book where I read this, where she talks about dinner time mm-hmm. really should be, or maybe Trinidad? It was in something else, like a holy place too. Like it's a coming together. Was that an Even Exile?
It's life-giving home, I think.
Okay.
Or life-giving table.
But what I loved about that, it actually changed my perspective about dinner time and even mm-hmm. spiritually what's going on. So in my, a joint dinner is really important to me. That doesn't always happen because I've got a working daughter and both of my sons are in different sports. And so, but I really try to fight for, we sit down at dinner together. It's like the only time now mm-hmm. that my kids are older where we're together. And it's really interesting. It's almost like spiritually we have to fight for that because mm-hmm. it just so much seems to go awry. When my kids were little, making dinner was a hassle because they're at my legs. That's when they're crying. That's when they're, and so when, and now I can't remember. I thought it was Even Exile, but I can't remember now where I, that kind of aha moment came to me through, but, changing my perspective, this is like a spiritual battle here. Mm-hmm. And I actually have to fight for this. But that, you know, part of it too, your kids are where they're at. Some kids, you know, I have one son who he'll eat whatever you put in front of him. He's just so grateful mm-hmm. that somebody has made him dinner and he doesn't have to go fend for himself. And then, you know, I have another kid who thinks they have allergies to everything and this hurts my stomach and that hurts my stomach. And then I have another kid who's just super picky. And so all of that comes mm-hmm. together to where there's almost never a meal where like all five of us are like, yes, mm-hmm. I can't wait to eat this, you know? And so it's just constant. Like there's mm-hmm. just every night that's the situation. But I think you have to, it's kind of, you know, what we've been talking about, but the training is just, it's consistent. You're not going to just tell your 2-year-old one time, oh, we're not going to complain. That is in him to mm-hmm. want to complain. And so you just have to keep at it. There have been times, in our family, maybe not quite so, when they were quite that young, but we've actually given them the choice. Like you can either eat dinner with us right now, or you can go to your room while the rest of us eat dinner. Mm-hmm. But you're not going to complain about the meal while we're eating. And so we've actually had to do that a couple of times where we have sent our kid upstairs to the room. Basically, they lost the privilege of eating with us as mm-hmm. a family because they refused to be grateful. They refused not to complain. And so that has actually helped to just make that call. And then also it's just something that we pray about, you know.
There are times where you give, and my husband's far more gracious on this than I am because of how he grew up differently than I did. But we ate what was in front of us. But we recently went through, don't tell anyone outside this room, but I was like, your friends are banned from dinner because they're all too picky. So have your friends over. I love them being here after dinner or before dinner. They can't come to dinner. I'm not going to throw any more food away. And because all their friends are so picky. And they were like, really? I'm like, yeah, nope. You each have one friend that's allowed. And I told them who the friend was. And everyone else right now, dinner's too hard right now. And we don't have enough money to throw away food. And we also are dealing with allergies we have to accommodate in our home. So they can't come to dinner. And they were like, what? And so I was telling one of our friends who's allowed at dinner, her parents, that she was allowed at dinner. And they were laughing. They said, that's funny because we've told our kids, we want you when you go into other people's homes, but we train it at home that it's like you're on a mission trip and you don't go on a mission trip. And you're like, oh, you know what? I don't eat this. Yeah. You know, like this is because you don't want to offend the, but the reality is it's also an attitude of learning new things, growing, stretching yourself, being adventurous, just honoring God, loving others. And so my husband is great about, he'll be like, your mom made this and man, we need to have a grateful heart. How kind that your mom, and you know, all of that, which I'm sure y'all are doing, but then there are times where we've had to just call it, like they can't handle it. And there's a lot of elements that are going into them not being able to handle this particular meal. But we've also done the exact flip is either they were removed or a friend of mine told me years ago and we do this, that's fine. You don't have to eat it. You can't have anything else to eat the rest of the night and it's going to get boxed up and that's what you have to have for breakfast. And then they don't get to exit that meal in our home until it's done. So like if we're going on a field trip, we're going to bring that with us. That's what you'll have. Everyone else will be having a sack lunch, but not you. And I don't say it meanly or mockingly. Like, that's fine. You don't have to eat it, but you're going to have it for breakfast. So while we're all having, you know, eggs and bacon, they're eating whatever it was on that dinner they didn't want to eat that night because it's not bad for them. It's not going to hurt them. They don't have an allergy. They don't prefer it. And that's okay. I don't determine all the snacks you eat. Like, I give you some choice in that. But at dinner, and there is some ability to have some choice, like, you know, there are occasions where they'll say, can I trade this vegetable for this? Sure. But they understand they still have a vegetable, you know, and there's an occasion that also once my kids, that was huge. When my kids realized they weren't going to escape it, that they couldn't slide it off and then not revisit it, that, yeah, that's totally fine. I understand not wanting that in this moment, but I'm going to bring it out at breakfast tomorrow. They're like, oh, God, never mind. And a lot, they usually gave up that battle. Like, oh, I'm not going to get away from this. Shoot. Okay. And we actually had to start doing it because we have such a picky daughter. One of them that my husband was like, no, there are we're five plates deep in the fridge right now of what she didn't want from all the last five meals. So then we're like, okay, no more. You get it at the next meal. And until that's done, you don't get any additional food. You don't get snacks. You don't get additional meals until that meal is done. And then all of a sudden the like being picky is not nearly as tempting. But it's also,
there are some aversions, like
sure.
My Levi, who is my grateful eater. I will never forget when he doesn't like cooked carrots and he'll eat raw carrots, but he won't eat cooked. Yeah. And I'm thinking if you eat like cooked carrots are way better than raw carrots. So, and I will never forget the time at the dinner table where he's like literally throwing it back up into his mouth. And I'm like, okay. You don't have to eat cooked carrots.
Yes.
Like, well, like when I see you physically like trying to get this piece of food down unsuccessfully and everyone else in the dinner table now is like, and I also don't like cooked carrots now. Then we'll let that one slide. But there's a difference, you know, it's to your point where you know that on a different day he likes that food. It's just, he is exerting his will. Mm-hmm. In this way and in this moment, that's where we would do that too. And we've over the, and also you can't stick with one thing and just stay there the whole time. We have gone back and forth, like with them too. We've done that. Okay. Then you're going to eat it tomorrow. And then, or we've also done like, you know, if you don't want this dinner, something very bland and plain, that's cheap that they can have instead. Or it's like, okay, well, eat whatever you like on this plate. But then if it's not enough, then you don't get any more food for the night. So we've done all kinds of, with the different stages. And then even to your point, financially, like kind of just depending on where we're at financially, like we've made different decisions. But yeah, it's part of that. It's that understanding piece that Jen talked about where you're understanding what's really going on here. You know, is this like an actual aversion? Or is this just an exertion of will that we need to discipline, you know?
And for when they initially, what's your version?
I mean, I think, you know, Alex, like Wade, does a good job kind of encouraging. We just say that we're not going to complain about dinner. And we've actually even given them the perspective of it actually affects everyone else at the table. Because when you're picking at it or making comments, like now everyone is feeling grossed out or, you know, whatever. And that's where we went to the, if you choose to complain, then you're going to lose the privilege of eating dinner with us. And you actually can do that with a 2-year-old. You can say, you're going to go, I don't know if he's still in a crib or not, but you know, I'm going to set you in there and you're not going to get to have dinner with us. And say like, and we're really going to miss you. My family knows that I want us to eat together. Like I value that time. And so when we're in a situation where we have to remove them from that, I communicate that like, and I'm really sad because this is my favorite part of the day is when we get to be together at the dinner table. And so I'm really going to miss you being here, but we're not going to let you ruin it.
We may have gotten a little extreme on that. We've read Wade has been studying grumbling. And so there's multiple times in scripture where when you grumbled, you died immediately. And that's what he's been telling our kids. You know what? God really wants us to have cheerful, grateful hearts. And actually so much so that he's so serious about grumbling.
Yeah.
Like it's not something we mess with. And we don't want you to get in a pattern of this and mess with this as an adult. And this is right now training. This is what we're doing. Our home is training for how to walk with God when you get to be an adult and leave our home. And so part of the training is not grumbling, because there's going to be so many things you can grumble about your whole life. And I get it. There's a million things I want to grumble about. I remember not liking food at my mom's table either. My mom made me eat like mushy asparagus with mayonnaise on it. It was awful. Like so many things, you know, like I get it. I can identify. There's nothing wrong with identifying. I get it. Let me tell you some of the awful things I had to eat in my home. And I'm trying not to do that to you, but
yeah,
there are also things that we need to eat them because they're good for our bodies or what we have.
Mm-hmm.
God wants us to have really grateful hearts. And he also, I don't want you to just fear God because he loves you, but man, he's serious about grumbling. He killed people on the spot for it. I don't want to do that. We don't want to do that. We've just said it like that. They're like, you know, but it's true.
Yeah.
He doesn't mess with that. So we don't mess with it in our home, if that makes sense. I mean, we're going to grumble. We do it all the time still, but I'm having to correct it in myself as I tell them that, like, oh.
Oh, man.
So.
Boy, yeah.
Sometimes it just seems like it's a bummer, but then I'm thinking about.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Yes. Yes.
Yeah.
The weight of it. Mm-hmm. This is important to God. This is where you're at. What else are they going to grumble about that they don't make enough money? No. You know, like
right.
This is what
yeah.
they have to grumble
yeah.
about right now.
Yeah.
So we're training at each step, you know?
When do you start talking to your kids about like sexuality for like girl and
boy? Oh, that's a great question.
And like how
you should
do it. Approach like with girls.
Yeah, that's a great question.
Mm-hmm.
It might have some to do with personality. I don't know.
Yeah.
We tried to just make it age appropriate, constant, like very naturally, where it's not like, we wait until they get a certain age and then we sit them down for the talk.
Mm.
But you know, for my daughter, even like at a very young age, she was so inquisitive.
Mm-hmm.
So she would say, well, where do babies come from? And how does that happen? And so I would tell her, I told her actually. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think it would, you know, at the start it was like, well, it's, you know, it's a piece, you know, it's part of the dad and it's part of the mom and it comes, you know, from the love. And, you know, so I would kind of just say, and even like, you know, menstrual cycle and all of that.
Mm-hmm.
I really, even though it did not feel natural, and I felt, you know, very uncomfortable to talk about it, I just really tried to talk about it in a way of just very natural.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, she sees my feminine products
mm-hmm.
and it's like, oh yeah, that's, and you're going to have that too. And this is why that
mm-hmm.
happens. And, so that it's not just this weird thing where I'm constantly, I don't know what they're getting from other people,
yeah.
but it's just natural. And then same with my boys. My husband really did kind of have a talk with them, but very young. And again, age appropriate, but you know, even about sex. And then what we have tried to do is just have that door open
mm-hmm.
where when things happen or when questions come up, we just, the best that we can, we just talk about it. Like we're talking about anything else.
Yeah.
Like it's just no big deal. This is totally normal to talk about. I'm not blushing. You're not blushing. Like, and that's what we've tried to do so that, they just know that it's, it's normal and it's comfortable. And especially in this day and age, you know, with what is going on in our world with just gender confusion. And again, it's one of those new cultural ideas. I'm like, I'm not, nope, my kid is not going to be a guinea pig on this. Mm-hmm. And so if I have a little precious baby girl that the Lord has stewarded me with, she's going to know what it means to be female and what a gift and a privilege that is. And my boys are going to know what it means to be male and what an honor it is to be male. And so, I want to talk about that in a way that is God honoring and pushes against the cultural, dysfunction of it. So I don't know if that answers your question or not, but we just try to really make it very normal and open for discussion.
One of the things that we've told our kids too is because I do want to beat their friends to the punch. I want them to hear it from me before they hear it. So they don't think it's awkward. They don't learn weird things first and I have to correct, but I also don't want them telling other kids.
Yeah.
So I've like, without making it awkward, but saying, you know what, these are things that right now we're not going to bring up with our friends because I'm not sure what they know, what they don't know, what their parents want them to know. Because that's one of the biggest things. I don't want them informing their friends about where babies come from when their parents didn't tell them that yet. Yeah. That's not their place. And so we've even kind of walked. That's the other thing with a running pack is being able to feel, what do your kids know already?
Yeah.
And especially if our kids aren't asking, then I'm not going to tell them yet. If they're not even asking, I'm not going to
even have
fill this in for them when they're not asking. Not because I don't want them to know, but there's no reason. They don't need to carry that yet.
Yeah.
So there's this kind of this like, I don't know.
Yeah.
And then because our girls are so close in age, pretty much what one knows, the other's going to know. And so I had to be ready for the youngest to know whatever. Mm-hmm. So there's that.
Yeah.
So follow up to that question. I think a lot of us here experience like our little kids are talking about like who's going to marry who.
Yeah.
That kind of talk and or like who likes who and like they talk about like kissing and stuff like that. So my daughter, she's 6 and my son is 3 and they will talk about stuff like that with like pairing people up and all that. So how do you navigate that? Like, do you, because my husband and I would explain to them, like, you know, we don't talk about marriage because, you know, they're still so young.
Yeah.
That is for, like, later. When they, like, express, like, they like this person or whatever.
Sure.
What do you like about them?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Do you like playing with them? Are they really kind? Do they like
Include
your friends? So we tried to, like, bring it into, like, that.
Yeah.
Instead of, like, the romantic part of it.
Yes.
But sometimes it just gets a little like they're just like constantly talking about it.
Yeah.
And I know like they're also at that stage where it's like pretend playing, you know? Like,
yeah.
Really, but what are some other things that we could like, you know, lean into? Mm-hmm.
Sam's way beyond this, so she can probably, we're in the throes of it with you. But one of the things that we've said to our girls is I want you to be really careful about talking about that because you have an opportunity that I didn't even have because there weren't kids like that many kids at our church my age at the time. You have an opportunity to run with these boys for a long time, Lord willing.
Yeah.
And they have parents who really love God and are teaching them to love God. But you're going to ruin that relationship with them if you continue in this talk because there's going to come a point where they're going to feel like that's really awkward because it is awkward because you're not at the age of dating and marrying.
Yeah.
And so if you do that, you're going to ruin. You're just going to bomb. Do you love playing with so-and-so? Yeah. He's not going to want to play with you anymore if you continue to bring this up because one, boys don't hit that nearly as early as you do. And two, that's not the road you're on right now. Mm-hmm. And you're going to ruin that relationship and you could be friends with them for a lot of years to come, but you're going to ruin it if you do that. And they're like, okay. And that includes most of it right now with my oldest daughter is that her friends all have older siblings. So they're triangulating like, do you like to, okay, let's all pick who we like. And I've just had to train her in how to dismiss herself from those conversations, how to not take part in them and not make it awkward, not be judgmental. That's not her place, but well, I'm better than, that's not what it is. Yeah. This is why it's unhelpful. How do we, but you're going to be in them. So how do we get to where we can still be there and not participate? how, like, ways to change the conversation and ways to be quiet and not awkward, but just not participate because that's not helpful. And as soon as the boys catch wind of that, you're going to lose all their friendships. Mm-hmm. And the girls will also, because there's even some girls already that I was told by another mom, oh, everyone has said that boy is reserved for Myla. They know he likes her. So, and I'm like, you know, and so like, but that's going to create contention if those girls decide they don't want him reserved for Myla, you know, like, so just how do we do that? And just helping her, and you know how to do it because you were probably there. So I've had to pull out like, oh no, junior high, what did I do wrong? How could she do it right? You know, like, so, yeah, because it's just like, it's, they're in it. That's the problem. They're in the midst of it. So how do they do it and do it well? And really the thought of losing friendships has not settled well with my girls. Well, one of them, the other.
And you don't just lose friendships with the boys. You actually lose friendships with the girls too, because you start, you like the same boy or it's like, I mean, yeah, this is actually a huge thing, a huge lesson even for my daughter that she's learned where she's just like, I don't want to have anything to do with it until we're at an age where it's like, well, we'll find out who he likes when he asks one of us on a date.
Yeah.
Nothing else needs to be said about it. Like, exactly. It's just, you have to just be so careful. And, but it's so true. It's like, we want to create a culture where it's very inclusive. Mm-hmm. And dating is exclusive in every sense. It's just exclusive. And so liking people is a very exclusive thing. And I certainly, you know, we want our kids to talk about qualities that they like.
Two
of our kids are very open about it. One of them, it's like pulling teeth, but that's good. And those questions that you and your husband are asking, like, it's so good because you do want to ask, well, what do you like about him? And if all they say is like, oh, he's super cute, then it's like, well, every super cute person is going to eventually be, you know, older and, you know, maybe not as cute, or their personality is going to be so terrible that you're going to forget why they were cute, you know? So, but it's like, actually that's what you want to focus on and kind of turn it more toward that. Like, we are naturally attracted to people who are kind or who, you know, are strong enough to do this or that, or, and then to even like have those cool and popular conversations and just the snare that can be.
But it is such a help to my a girlfriend of mine. All her kids are in youth group with me right now. And I was talking about this dynamic and how frustrating it is, even with dear, dear friends, girls that come into our house and start talking about this. And I'm like, takes everything in me and not burst in the room and be like, all of you be quiet right now. And don't say things like that to my daughter, you know, like, and I'm like, okay, how do I handle this with grace? But she said, you know what? We've made that same rule. And even my 12-year-olds all have someone at church that they admire from afar. And I know they've told me, and I've said, you know what? Keep that close. Don't tell anyone else.
Yeah.
And like Elizabeth Elliott talks about that, like the things that are most dear to you, keep them, say the least about them. That's not helpful to just be talking about it. But I've also given the girls me as an out for their age right now. When that comes up, say, you know what? My mom and dad have asked that we don't talk about this. I have some boys that I've noticed. I'm not actually allowed to talk about this. Because there's a lot of things right now that their friends are willing to talk about that I don't want them talking about, but they don't have the emotional intelligence to navigate that conversation.
Yeah.
So then they just feel stupid if they're not allowed to talk about it. Mm-hmm. So there's things that I have to say. I'm out. Make me the bad guy. You know what? My mom said I can't talk about that. Because I can with me, but they're not allowed to talk about with those girls. Any girl. So.
Yes. It's actually, it's also ostracizing for moms. That's the other thing. It's normal and it's natural. But even the moms, because if two moms are talking about how their kids are going to pair up, then what about the third mom who has a daughter or a son and then they're having to think, well, is my kid not up? It's just, it's exclusive in every sense of the word. So anyway, I know we're way, way, way beyond time. So
yes.
Sorry. Yeah, we are over on time. So you guys are welcome to head out.